Thank you for the introduction, Dr. Baldwin. I appreciate the opportunity to present some of my master's research I'm working on at the University of Arkansas for Dr. Karcher. Overall, my research involves technologies for evaluating putting green surface characteristics, and I'm going to talk about one aspect of that today, of measuring moisture very close to the putting green surface. And it's important to kind of state up front, while we are talking about measuring moisture very close to the surface today, these measurements are intended to supplement rather than replace existing volumetric water content measurements down in the root zone. The origins of this work kind of came out of some possible unintended consequences of wetting agents, where there were claims from superintendents that certain wetting agent products were retaining excessive moisture at the surface. So we wanted to have the ability to investigate those claims, kind of quantify the moisture within that surface region. And what we're really looking to do is, like I said, not replace but expand the range with which we can measure moisture in a putting green. And we're looking to bring that as close to the surface as possible, where it has the most direct impact on playability, but also not just playability, the ability to evaluate management practices as well. So what we're really trying to do is create a unique set of data out there that speaks to being able to balance plant health with playability. And so the objective of this research was to predict volumetric water content within the uppermost 1.2 and 2.5 centimeters of sand-based putting greens using time domain reflectometry. And the two studies that are involved in the work, study number one involved sampling done exclusively in the lab. Samples were extracted from our greens and brought inside, and all measurements were taken in the lab. And in 2013, that kind of addressed the initial question, can this even be done? Can we detect differences in moisture content in the range we're talking about? So there was sort of the development of the methodology and adaptations to existing equipment involved there. And based on those results in 2014, we expanded our sample range that we wanted to include other cultivar species and different ages of putting greens where the physical characteristics might play a role and see how our model held up in those situations. And then study number two were our field samples, where we basically took our lab sampling procedure and executed it, carried it out in the field to see how it held up kind of under real-world conditions. And the last thing I'd like to touch on, there is a two-point calibration procedure that kind of relates to two different studies in this research. So for this study, what we used was a Field Scout TDR-300 from Spectrum, which its prevalence in our ongoing research program as well as the golf industry made it a good candidate for this work, as well as the way that it kind of measures soil moisture and the way it displays that information. The meter generates a wave, and what this meter directly measures is time. It generates a wave, and as that wave is transmitted down the rods, it measures that time. And based on the internal calculations it performs, due to the way the presence of water affects the travel time of the wave, it performs a conversion from that time in microseconds into volumetric water content. Now, one of the things that's convenient about the Field Scout meter is that it can also report that raw travel time. You can get the data without having to make that conversion, and you can see what the travel time was apart from the internal calculations. Now, in doing that, the actual depth of the measurement is defined by the rods that are attached as well as the mode that's been selected for the meter. But there are necessary minimum rod lengths associated with accuracy and reliability in these type measurements. And currently, the minimum are 3.8 centimeter rods that are available and made for the unit. So, as I said, there is a need to preserve that minimum rod length in order to make the measurements reliable. And, you know, it makes sense as you think about it, because we're measuring time. As that rod length physically shortens, the travel time approaches the same order of magnitude as the error involved in the sensing of the time. And so it clouds the issue when it comes to understanding the times and the amount of water present. But so physically shortening the rods was not an option for this. We're trying to go from 3.8 centimeters down to 2.5 and 1.2 centimeters. So again, physically shortening the rods was not an option for this work, but physically blocking them presented, you know, a possibility. What we did was we constructed a very simple spacer block just to reduce the effect of penetrating depth, so that the wave still had to travel that full 3.8 centimeters, but it was going to, if we designed the block correctly, it was going to be consistent through that block every time, and only the moisture encountered in those terminal exposed ends was going to actually affect the changes that we saw and be related to the moisture that was present at those depths. So because we're changing the measurement depth, the internal calculations are obviously not going to apply to what we're measuring, but the Field Scout does outline in its manual a soil-specific calibration procedure where you would take those period mode readings, getting the raw travel time, and you would also pair that up to a volumetric water content, which you can calculate through differences in weight by taking a fresh weight and then a dry weight of your sample, and then plotting those two and performing regression analysis. So for study one, where we were conducting all the sampling in the lab, as I said, in 2013, initially all the samples came from one particular block of our research green, which was an older established block of creeping bent grass. In 2014, we expanded that to include, we went back to the same block as well, but also wanted to include a recently renovated creeping bent grass block where there may be less accumulated organic matter, and just see how that may affect it, and then also included hybrid Bermuda grass in the samples that year. But our sampling procedure stayed the same both years, that what we would do, we would extract the samples from the green and bring them into the lab where they're all cut to uniform height, saturated, and then they were removed and allowed to dry for different varying lengths of time in order to create as broad a range of water contents as possible. When it came time to sample, the readings were taken in period mode with the block on, and then that sample was immediately cut to the corresponding depth of the sample taken. It was weighed. We also collected diameter and thickness measurements. So we had a fresh weight. We had the size, the volume measurements we needed for that sample, and then they were dried at 105 Celsius to remove all water, and we could calculate our volumetric water from that. So, and those data were taken into SAS for regression analysis. And so in 2013, the initial lab samples, we were able to produce a, based on the p-value, a highly significant linear prediction equation for the data which we collected. And you can see on this graph, the x-axis are the period readings. That's that raw travel time that was actually displayed at each reading. And then the y-axis is the volumetric water content as determined by weight. Our 1.2 centimeter samples are in red, and our 2.5 centimeter depth are all the blue samples. So you can see our R-squared values a little bit better for the 2.5 centimeter depth, but we do have a nice correlation values there for both sets of samples. Now, when we expanded that out to 2014, I thought this was kind of the best way to sort of summarize how what we were seeing in 2013 remained consistent through 2014. The PIN-G2 was, again, the same block, and we were seeing similar coefficients there for slope and intercept, and that continued across the Tyee, the recently renovated block, as well as the ultra-dwarf green. So down in the bottom right-hand corner, you can see for all of 2014, those were the sample data that were collected. And again, we've got R-squared values of 0.92 and 0.95. in 2014. So when you put it all together, the samples across the 2 years, we still are maintaining a very similar regression coefficient for our equations. And those are displayed here again with the 1.2 centimeters in red and 2.5 depth in blue. And this table kind of lays that out as far as what those estimates from the equations actually were. But it also puts a confidence in 95% confidence interval for all the lab samples collected across 2013 and 14. And so this is kind of a good point to introduce the calibration procedure. When we first started this work, we were using a version of firmware that did not have the calibration procedure, and since then that's been added in. And it's something that Spectrum allows for the rods that it manufactures based on just a simple two-point calibration where first a reading's taken in air, and then a second reading's taken with the rods fully submerged in deionized water. And sort of based on those 2 points, it's able to produce a linear equation that helps its internal calculations for producing the volumetric water values that you see. So kind of in the process of upgrading firmware, it just became an obvious question. What does it look like if we compare a two-point calibration to the data that we had collected with all those samples? And what you end up seeing is that when you reduce the rod length, the calibration procedure is no longer possible with that meter, and it kind of politely asked me if I know what I'm doing. But we could still attempt to carry out the procedure just producing our own numbers, not relying on the meter to accept the values that we were creating. We kind of went back to that soil-specific calibration procedure where you take a period reading in air and in DI water, and then you correspond that to values of 0 and 100% if we're calculating a volumetric water content by weight. So when you do that, then you can produce an equation. This is the same table we saw before at the top, but at the bottom is are the equations for the two depths produced from the two-point calibration, performed that way. And wow. Okay.
Just keep going.
All right.
Just keep going.
You got a soundtrack. The slope and the intercept both fell within the 95% confidence interval at 1.2 and 2.5 centimeters. So that was encouraging, I think, to maybe show it a little bit better. Here are all the field data from 2013 and 2014, and then those are the two-point calibration equations laid on top of it. So you can see that, rather than we collected 135 samples over the course of 2 years and produced these equations, and at the same time a superintendent could perform a simple two-point calibration and get to that point relatively easily. So we took a little bit of this out into the field and wanted to see, rather than having samples that were saturated and all the measurements conducted completely in the lab, how did this process carry out under a little more real-world conditions out in the field. So in 2015, all of our sampling occurred in the field, and it's kind of one important step, just the mechanics of having a field sample is that period readings had to be taken and then samples were extracted, whereas in the lab samples they were obviously extracted first. So and then when we were saturating from the bottom up in the lab, the saturation occurred from the top down, that the bottom of the sample in the lab was effectively the 6.5 centimeters, whereas it was extended on down to the bottom of the green. So there were just a few differences that I think you'll kind of see when we get into some of the data. But, all of the same sample groups were used again as far as an established creeping bent grass, a recently seeded one, and then an ultra dwarf putting green. So when you take those field data equations from 2015, which are at the bottom, and you look back to our 95% confidence intervals from the original 2013 and 2014 lab data, those coefficients, slope nor intercept, they do not fall within that interval. We still have pretty good R-squared values. There is a correlation there, but we're not the same correlation that we were seeing with our field data and to kind of show, or with the lab data. So to kind of show that, here are the field data from 2015, and then when you put those two-point calibration equations next to the 2015, and they fit the lab data so well, but here you can see that our field data, we just have lower volumetric water content values at each of the periods. So one thing we kind of wanted to look at, obviously we do see a correlation there in the field. We are measuring differences, but what may be the relationship between the calibration line and then the line that we're seeing in the field? And so just kind of simply looking at the ratio there, we were able to come up with some, fairly easy to produce conversion factors that could describe the relationship between the calibration equation and the model produced from the field sample. So to kind of wrap all this up, the conclusions that for sand-based putting green samples at both the 1.2 and 2.5 centimeter depth, TDR readings in microseconds were correlated with volumetric water content both in the lab and in the field. That differences in moisture content can be detected by physically blocking the TDR rods to reduce penetrating depth. And that two-point calibration procedure offers a simplified method for developing a linear model consistent with laboratory samples. And finally, that a single conversion factor can be used to adjust a two-point calibration model to the model created using field sample data. And just kind of projecting that forward to the course, the implications that, simple adaptation to existing TDR technology allow superintendents the ability to expand the range of volumetric water content measurements closer to the putting surface, that relative differences in volumetric water over time and space offer new sets of information for decisions related to playability and management practices, and as with standard TDR measurements, that site-specific interpretation of the specific and particular BWC values and ranges will be the most beneficial. I would like to thank, I was supposed to be in the graduate student competition, and so this feels a little out of place on some of the presentation, but I definitely want to thank my research, my master's research committee for the role they played in helping me out, especially my advisor, Dr. Karcher. I'd like to thank all the people at Spectrum who have been very generous with their time and shared a lot of information with me, and we've got a great group at University of Arkansas working at the Earthgrass Research Center, and I'm very appreciative to all the people listed here. There are the references to the Spectrum devices, and if there's time, I'd be happy to take any questions. Yes, sir. The blocking material, it was just a foam mat that you could purchase at a hardware store, and it was just cut specifically to the dimensions of the base of the TDR, drilled a couple of pilot holes, and we actually wrapped it in a weatherproof tape to try and prevent it from absorbing any moisture as well. But the thickness was kind of convenient. It was easy to work with, obviously easy to acquire, and the thickness, we didn't have to worry about it affecting the damaging the rods or affecting the signal, but the thickness allowed for a single layer to be used to reduce it to 2.5 centimeters, and then it's just a double stack version of that to create the 1.2 centimeter depth.
Thank you, Daniel.